as a culture, as believers, as baby boomers, as Generation X, as millennials, we need to understand what world we live in now. Psalm 46, verse 10. Be still and know that I am God. Simple phrase. Be still and know that I am God. The transition to becoming a person who walks in peace with all circumstances is something I referred to last week, and I'm going to go over it again real quickly today. Three steps to do that. The transition to that is not easy and can't be portrayed as being easy. Because we live in such a world, we live in circumstances that can so quickly dictate our life. And this battle that we wage is not against flesh and blood. So for me to learn what it is to be still, especially when the first verse says, or second verse says, therefore we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. I don't think that's just poetic expression. I think he's saying very clearly that even if all this world crumbles, literally, be still and know that I am God. If you lose your job, be still and know that I am God. If your children are somewhat walking astray and not really walking the way that you know you trained them and the way you want them to go, be still and know that I am God. If your politician didn't get in, and now you're putting all over Facebook the evils of the new culture and what's going to happen now, be still and know that I am God. In every part of our lives, it can't be a phrase. It's got to be a lifestyle. And to do that, there's things that must take place in us, in changing us from one to another. And that's why I want to repeat some certain things that I said last week, but also draw out some new points. But I happened to see something on Facebook that intrigued me this week. I saw a video of a man describing what's going on in the new generation, the millennials, and what isn't happening. Because it's not just in the millennial culture, it's transcended into many of us. I want you to see that. Why would I show that with a verse, be still and know that I am God? Because what you heard is what you can see evident in all of the world today. I remember my little story about this. Heather's downstairs, so I can say this a little freer. But right before Heather got married, 2 days before, and I'm going through this turmoil and grief that I'm losing my daughter somehow, I was sitting in a restaurant, and right behind me in the restaurant was a father and his daughter, about 11 years old. And I really, when Heather was 11, I told her not to ever grow up anymore, just stay 11. I just wanted, she didn't listen. But I remember hearing them in the booth, and the father was not listening to a word his daughter was saying. She was just an 11-year-old, chatty Kathy. And he's going, uh-huh, uh-huh. At that time, he wasn't using cell phones. It was just culturally, he was just not there. And I literally wanted to turn around, and almost did, as rude as it would have been, and said, in 2 days, I'm giving my daughter away. You better appreciate every moment you're with that girl. That was years ago. Giving my daughter away hasn't hurt me at all. I gained a son-in-law, and I gained 6 grandchildren. But I spent those moments with my daughter and my son talking. I go into a restaurant today, and I see husbands and wives like this the whole time. I see the children, as soon as they can get a phone, like this. I can see a single parent, you know, you can actually tell that, a single parent that has their child for the day. You can just see it. I don't know how I know, but I can just see it. I see them at the table like this. I know that I experienced as a parent my son at an early age getting bullied and the pain that that caused me in a physical sense getting bullied. I now know that there's plenty of teenagers, young people getting cyberbullied all the time. It's real. And it's killing our culture. What is our option as a believer then? Do we just complain about the culture? Do we complain about children? Do we just go into these like I was going to do at the restaurant and turn around and yell at the man? Do we just get mad at everybody that's doing it and get mad at restaurants when you see it happening? That never solved anything. But to ignore it is just as wrong as getting angry about it. So why I'm saying to you that these changes in our life have to come is because the church, the believer, has made to be salt and light in a world of darkness. We were called to be light. And Henry Blackaby once said that if darkness pervades the earth, it's not the fault of the darkness. It's the fault of the light. But we feel helpless. What do we do? How do we change anything? So when I give you a passage like I am today, what is it to be still and know that I am God, though the earth crumble into the sea? There are parameters, there are a parts of us that have to be willing to change and go forward and not step out and somehow just survive. So I gave you things last week. I gave you 3 points on moving forward, and I sort of clarified them a little bit better today. We have to deal with our past pain, our present fear, and our future doubt. As a person, if you're not healthy yourself and you're not able to deal with things with the Lord yourself, you have no power to help anybody else. But whatever you are able to do and the areas that you do overcome, you become empowered with authority to take that into other people's lives. So every one of us have issues and weaknesses in our life. Paul said, when I'm weak, I'm strong. Every one of us have issues. Every one of us have battles that we face. When we learn how to overcome in those areas, we have the ability to have authority to speak into it. And when you get that kind of authority, remember what he said to Peter. I am praying for you, Peter. Satan desires to sift you like wheat. And we know that Peter was, he gave in the garden. But I'm praying for you that when you have overcome, you'll strengthen your brothers. Strengthen means to encourage, to build up, and to walk with that point of authority that we need to have in speaking to other people's lives. Not throwing them a verse, but walking with authority. I want that as a pastor. I want to be able to not, the authority isn't telling someone what to do. It's speaking the word of life and having that penetrate the darkness. As we become children of light, the darkness has to dissipate. Darkness always dissipates in light. So it's a challenge that we face. What do we do? How do we get there? How do we learn how to be still? Well, last week I mentioned about the past, dealing with our past pain. One of the areas that holds all of us down is shame if we have it. If there's something you did and the enemy's always reminding me, oh, yeah, you don't even talk that way because you know who you are. You know what you've done. I referred to a commercial last week and I got a lot of response to it when I shared it. People seem to know about it. I wanted to show it to you today. If you've been around a little bit, you know the commercial. I just wanted to show it to you. The guy has a stain on his shirt. Stain starts talking. So when he's trying to give us an interview, tell who he is, all that the employer sees is the stain. And he sits there and stares at it the whole time. And as the guy's talking, the stain gets louder. To me, that signifies shame. Shame. That every time you want to move forward, even in your mind, if you came forward last week, the area up front was full of people. And I believe a lot of them were making that step, that commitment to move forward. When you do that, you go back to your seat. It only takes a little bit of time in your life to be reminded of what you're not. Somebody will remind you of it, including your own circumstances. And you never seem to go past that if you allow it to be in control. So when I say release the past pain, I'm saying release what is behind or you'll never go forward. The second is the present fear. To move into the realm of victory, you got to deal with your present fear. And the fear comes from being in, I would just refer to it as circumstantial living. Fear. What's going to happen? How am I going to pay this bill? How am I going to do this? How is this going to happen? When will it happen? Be still and know that I am God? Doesn't ask that question. Of course, we all have questions, but we don't let the question control us. We're not living according to our circumstance. Because the circumstances, by far, will come and go, ebb and flow, up and down. You have to learn what it is to be still. To be still means you don't live circumstantially. It also, the point that I wrote here on my own notes was, where is your bar of satisfaction? As I told you, I love to make you think. At the men's meetings, that's what we do. We just talk, and I ask questions that force them to think. Where's your bar of satisfaction? Meaning, where do you think is the good level? Is it an income level? Is it retirement? Is it some sort of a vehicle or a house, you know, the dream house of your life? Is it someone that you want to marry? Is it your children doing something or rising up above? What is your bar of satisfaction? Whatever that is, there's going to be fear in that because it's not constant. There's nothing secure in life. I mean, there are always times, there's seasons where what we think we need to have isn't going to be there. And when we live circumstantially and we feel that's our bar of success, that's what we go towards. That's what we live by. That's what our prayer life becomes. Lord, I just pray this into my life. This is going to happen. I'm going to get that house. I'm going to get this. I'm going to get these things. I'm going to pray. And you live in that bar. Nothing wrong with praying a prayer, but not when it becomes the central part of who you are and you declare in your own heart, that's what I need to survive. That's what I need to be happy. When we get to this part in the Word where he says he is everything to us, it separates the believer who learns how to be still and one who is constantly frustrated. When you're constantly frustrated, you'll tend to go backwards. You'll regress. So my challenge to you in giving you a message like this is do not regress. When the disciples were asked the second time, specifically even Peter, after all the turmoil of death, resurrection, and yes, he rose, but there was still turmoil in all the disciples because everything they thought about Christianity, everything they thought about what was going to happen didn't seem to. What they considered the kingdom to come was right then. Meaning Jesus came to set them free from Rome. And that wasn't the case. So their hearts were in turmoil. And then they failed. Then they stepped back. Then they didn't identify with him. Then Peter yells out, I don't even know who he is. Then one of their own literally betrays him. With all that going on, when Jesus, in his earthly form then, in the resurrected form, he looks at them. And he says to Peter, with 153 fish in the net, drop the nets and follow me. Peter was a fisherman. To him, success, the bar of success would have been fish. If I get enough fish, I can live. If he kept that the bar of his success, then whenever Jesus gave him 153 fish in the net, he could have said, hallelujah, this is my blessing. This is what I'm called to do. But he didn't. And he isn't having that call. You don't have just a call to be successful in this world. You have a call to be successful in the kingdom. And in the kingdom, it's everlasting. So if all your prayers, if the only thing you want to hear is messages and people telling you what you can get and what God wants to give you and how rich you can be, then you will make that your bar. And then you will call that your plateau of success. But when Paul said, I learned how it was to be abased and abound, he didn't glorify either one of those. He didn't say that you had to be poor. He didn't say you had to be rich. He said, I've learned to be content in every situation. He learned what it was to be still and know that he is God. So Peter was given the opportunity after failure to be a great fisherman. And then Jesus gave him the challenge. Would you drop that net and let go of all that and follow me. Did it mean that Peter never fished again? I don't know. It doesn't say. But it wasn't his life's work. It wasn't his bar of success anymore. You have to question your hearts to move forward. It's just not a verse. Be still and know that I am God. So you're going through turmoil and the pastor comes up and says, oh, Psalms 46:10, be still and know that I am God. That's great. It might help you a little bit at the moment. But being still is a lifestyle that's attained by release. When I said the third point of that, future doubt, when we live in present fear, we're going to battle them future doubt. If the present circumstances cause us turmoil, cause us fear, what's going to happen next? Then we will have a doubt about our future. And if I just get up and say, God's going to work all things together for good, not when you're living in doubt, not when you think that this is going to happen and therefore this will take place, that doubt will kill you. Because it will permeate, it'll infiltrate every part of you, even your worship to God. It'll be with, I love you, Lord, but this isn't really real in me. I'm not able to see any of this happen. And every part of you gets diluted. I don't know how to say this any clearer than what God says to me. Christianity was meant to be everything, not just something. The true effects, the true release of God's Spirit, of His promises, of His hope, is given to the believer who is willing to surrender all. It's just not given to everybody out there. You just get this, claim this, do this, and whatever, and it's all yours because He loves you. No, He never said that then, and He's not saying it now. He's saying to us, how willing are you to surrender to me, your very being, and let me show you what is there, how real this all is. Jesus even said to the disciples when there were people following him, Jesus said, I know who's truly with me. Because a lot of people followed him to get the fish, to get the bread, and even to get the miracle. But there were very few that followed him for just who he was. And Jesus said, I discern, I know the difference between those folks and these folks. It does not mean he doesn't love them. He loved the Pharisees. He loved those who turned against him. I believe his tears, when he heard those say, crucify, crucify, those were the tears of a man who loved, not just, oh, what's going to happen now to me. But yet, I say to you that the real nuggets, the real kingdom, does not come until you fully understand surrender. Because in that point of surrender, you're releasing your will to His. And only when I release my will to His am I able to be still and know that He is God in the midst of turmoil. So as believers, our objective in the coming days, no matter what takes place and how you think it's going to happen and what revelation eschatology you believe, no matter how you believe those things, whatever days lie ahead, your call is to be still and know that He is God. When the believer becomes a calming influence in society, it changes the atmosphere. But when the believer adapts to society, then we have no power. And in order to have that kind of an effect on people, we have to learn what it is to let go of our nets, to drop the nets. What Peter did that day was he said to Jesus, I love fish. I love to be successful, but I love you more. And then when he said that, Jesus was able to say to him, because you're saying that, now, Peter, feed my fish. Oh, man, that's even on Facebook Live right now. Feed my fish. Feed my children. Feed my sheep. Feed them. Peter was called to feed. That means from that point on, by surrendering, when Peter walked up and he said to the cripple in front of the temple who asked for money, and Peter said, silver and gold have I none. He must have been lying then because the disciples were all rich, somebody told me on TV. Silver and gold have I none, but what I have, I give unto you. And he told him to rise up. Did that happen because Peter learned a promise and he claimed it. Did that happen because he understood that Jesus healed? No, it happened because he walked in surrender in his life. He dropped his nets and he gained the authority that God gives. So while this is all out here, I believe in my heart it's just not blanket given to people who read a verse. It's given to people who understand surrender. And when I learn to walk in that surrender and I learn to see his kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven, then that becomes something that other people can see in me and they gravitate toward as well. And that's how I become an influence in my world, because I'm not shaken by the affairs of this world. I'm going towards the kingdom. I want to get a couple verses in before I finish, though. In Luke 22, verse 45, Luke 22, verse 45. It says, when he arose from the prayer and went back to the disciples, he found them asleep, exhausted from sorrow. You guys know where that is, right? It's in the Mount of Olives garden. Okay, now give me the second verse that I paralleled that with. They all joined together constantly in prayer, along with the women and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and with his brothers. That's in the book of Acts. So in the garden, they all fell asleep. In the book of Acts, they all met in an upper room constantly in prayer. What was the difference? They saw a different Jesus. This is called a dramatic pause. They saw a different Jesus. Who did they see? Well, let me show you how different it was. In John 20, verse 14. At this, Mary Magdalene says, that's who she's referring to. At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. The second passage, the road to Emmaus, Luke 15. On the road to Emmaus, that is often used at Resurrection Sunday to preach on, you remember that those two disciples were following Jesus, and it said that they did not recognize him until he opened and broke the bread. Then they recognized him. Okay, the last passage, Matthew 28, 17. When they saw him, they worshiped him, but some doubted. What's the context of this? This is when Jesus brought all of them together, hundreds together, and Jesus on the mount began to declare to them his mission now that he has been resurrected, that he's going up to glory, and what's going to happen now. It says they came together with him and they worshiped him, but some doubted. What did they doubt? They doubted this new Jesus that they hadn't really experienced before. The resurrected Jesus was not the Jesus that walked on the earth for those 3 years. Yes, it was part of him. Yes, the love, everything else was there, but something had changed in that period of time. And this is the critical part I want you to get. In order to experience the resurrected Jesus, you have to think eternally, not presently. So whenever they were in the garden as disciples and they began to pray, they got tired. They got overwhelmed with sorrow. Their mind just shut down. Sometimes when we just go through this turmoil of life isn't what I was promised, we want to shut down. That's where they were. And when a lot of people, when they shut down, they sleep. But for whatever reason, and I'm not saying the disciples were at that point, I'm telling you that Jesus said to them, watch and pray. Watch and pray with me. He's going through the most critical stage of his earthly ministry. He's going there before his Father, crying out, even saying, if it was possible, let this cup pass from me. He looks at his brothers that he spent 3 years with, please pray with me. And he comes back. And they're sound asleep. They couldn't do it. They couldn't stay awake because they were living in the fear of the moment. They were living in the doubt of the moment. They no longer believed their prayer was going to work because something was changing. But whenever he told them before he left, now I want you to go back and I want you to pray, it said that they began to pray and they began to believe because they saw a resurrected Jesus. Have you seen the resurrected Jesus? The resurrected Jesus is eternal. So you start looking eternally because you understand when you see Jesus that the death could not hold him. The grave could not hold him. He broke the power of sin and death. So now it's just not, Lord, get us out of the Roman Empire. Get us out of our oppression. Now it was, they saw the entire picture. They saw that there was an eternity ahead. So whether they dropped their nets or not, it's not even relevant. Because God said he would provide all their needs. So they weren't living in the affairs of this world. So they could go up into the synagogue and say, I don't have any silver or gold right now. It's not payday. But don't worry, because I'm carrying something that you need more than a dollar. See, the world doesn't need another dollar, and we don't need another understanding of how to get it. The world needs Jesus Christ. They need the resurrected Jesus Christ. They need to know that it's something that in them, that they can be still in the midst of their storm. They need to see it modeled by us. Not just told. Modeled. And if it's not ingrained in me that my shame is no longer holding me back, it's no longer that my circumstances that dictate my life, and I have no fear of my future because God said I'm in the palm of his hand. So if suddenly this building collapses after we're out of it, then I don't have fear because God's in charge. This is an old story, but it really is relevant to me at the moment. When we started the church in 1990, we met in a rental hall, as I've told you. And for 13 years, we met in a rental hall. And we tried to buy every building we could. We kept trying to buy. We need a permanent place. Didn't get one. All that turmoil is in my mind. Finally, it opens up on Old Clareton Road, that church. And it was wonderful. It was my dream of the moment. I remember just sitting in there when everything was just going on and saying, God, you gave me. I don't even have anything. I'm not asking for anything else, Lord. And then 6 months after finally getting this, 13 years later, the phone rings at midnight. Are you Reverend Ken Hune? Yes. I just want to inform you that your church is on fire. I said, what? Yeah, if you want to come over, it's on fire. I came over. All I could picture was a few cinder blocks. And Katie K interviewing me saying, and I'm looking at him saying, we shall rebuild. Because I've seen it 100 times. But on the way over, I just started saying, what's up with this, God? Why would you give me a building and have it burned down? Why is my dream after 13 years finally getting something, finally feeling like we're stable and we have somewhere for our children? Burning? Burning? Tears flowing down my eyes. Everything in me was like, I'm praying, but I'm fearful. I'm doubting. What happens now? Where do we go now? We just moved. We can't go back to that place. We can't go there again. Everything in my life seemed to be up in the air at that moment about my ministry. Because my mind was on the circumstance. Because I somehow believed that that building burned, that our ministry was done. I had no concept right there. Be still. And know that I am God. I wasn't there. I didn't see the resurrected Jesus. I saw me. I saw disappointment. But when I bring the resurrected Jesus into the equation, I might not even recognize it because it's not what I'm used to. Am I used to something saying, don't worry about it, Ken. I've got this. I'm in control. No, I'm used to the Jesus that's going to give me an answer real quick. It's going to provide real fast. As soon as I pray, it happens. And then I'll pray again because that worked that time. But if he delays in giving me an answer, what does that mean? I don't understand that. See, the resurrected Jesus is eternal. And the perspective we have to have on every part of our life, whether it's our families, our children, our finances, our future, whatever that is, we have to have it from the point that it is eternal. So what God is doing in me is not just for this moment that I need to have now. He's talking about something so far greater in my life. He's saying to me 20 years ago, Ken, I promised that if you would listen to me, you'd know that from 62 to 72, I'm going to do great things in your life that will far exceed what you think that will work out right now. And all those years in that rental hall were a part of planning in you. And when I took you to Phoenix and you thought you were going to and build this massive church there, and there was nothing there, and you came back a failure in your own mind. All of that was preparation, because I want to do in your life right now all these things, and I can't wait to see it happen. But if all at that moment I saw in Phoenix was, I'm a failure, I saw when I came back was, we can't get out of this rental facility, and then my building burns down, then all those things will cause me to doubt who he is. And how dare I get up and tell you he's great if my mind is full of doubt. But I say to you, not just circumstantially, but I say to you without a doubt, he's real, he's eternal, and he wants to give you a peace that allows you to be still no matter what. It's rich. It's rewarding. I'm going to close with this verse. It's from Hebrews 11, and then the team will come back up. And if you have children, by the way, once we start worshiping again, you can go back down and get them and bring them up for the ending of worship. I want to read from Hebrews 11 to you. It's a passage that can be very troubling. And I began with verse 33. I'll just read it from there. Who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised. Who shut the mouths of lions. How we rejoice in that. Daniel. Who quenched the fury of the flames. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Who escaped the edge of the sword. Many, including David, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign enemies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. Others were tortured and refused to be released so that they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, while still others were chained and put in prison. They were stoned. They were sawed in two. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. Out and there, the world was not worthy of him. Well, does that excite you? Can you wait? Am I giving you a depression here? No, I'm just telling you, that how could they possibly have handled that kind of circumstance were it not for seeing a resurrected Jesus? That they were willing even at that point to say, I don't ever want to deny the name of Jesus. If that means my life, that's fine, because I've seen the resurrected Jesus. I'm not living for this world anymore. I'm living for him. Ken D'Alessandro just wrote today on his Facebook account an article and asked us to pray. In that article, he states that there was a Christian believers that were kidnapped in a city, and they killed the mother right away, took the father and the two sons as captive, and today they found the beheaded bodies of this family. And the call of the insurgents, the call of the radical Muslim, is they're called to kill and go after the church. I pray to God it never enters the doors. But are we ready to stand for what we believe? Are we living in a world of circumstance, proclaiming our hope and our situation to change? Are we looking at him and saying, Lord Jesus, no matter what, I serve you? The power in that promise, that surrender, is immeasurable, because he gives the Spirit without measure. The resurrection of Jesus Christ allowed hundreds to go into an upper room and 120 on the day of Pentecost to receive the anointing of power that transcended them from that moment on. It came with surrender first. Prayer is surrender. It really is. It's so easy not to pray. It's so easy as a church to not have people come out to pray. We're all busy. Our lives are full. We're not crying out to God. So what we become is we become worshipers of the Jesus we want, not the resurrected Jesus. But the power that allows you to be still and know that he is God, it comes from the resurrected Jesus. Can I have the team come up? Parents can go down and get their children. We'll sing these last two songs. asking our God to change us, set us free, be released, get and see the eternal Jesus.